Welcome to Once Upon a Taster podcast. I am Jamie Penders, and in this podcast, I'm on a journey to discover the most remarkable and everyday flavor experiences. With short stories, tastings, fun facts, and appetizing conversations about taste experience. There's no arguing about taste, but there's sure a lot to talk about. Once Upon a Taste, a podcast that brings taste to the table. Six women who had never met before around the table and let the magic of a nourishing meal and meaningful conversation happen. The Connecting Dining Experience platform and the table brings women from around the world the opportunity to host and or visit small teamed dining events. An experience of nourishment through food and company. I first found out about And the Table through Raquel Payaloden, who was a guest in a previous episode of Once Upon a Taster podcast. And we have talked a bit about the And the Table she hosted in episode 37. Today I am in Amsterdam to talk with the founding mother of And the Table, Samantha Danielle Wolfson. I'm so excited to be here, Sam.
Oh my God, I love that you called me the mother of it.
You are, right?
Yeah, no, I am, but I've never been referred to as that, and I actually really like
Projects
that.
Projects are your babies.
Yeah, they are, and all my hosts are my women, so you kind of feel like the mother of all of them, and yeah, it's just it's very soothing, it's very fitting.
Well, and I would like to ask you, shall we dive in? But before that, we would like to invite someone in, because yeah. You're also a mother to a dog, and sometimes you will maybe hear a little bit through the episode, but we like her to be inside. Yes, we will dive in.
Let's dive in.
To break the ice, I've asked you, Sam, to select an object, ingredient, recipe, or dish,
yes,
which holds special flavor memories to mm-hmm. you. Would you like to share what you have brought to the table, imaginary, and what's the story behind it?
So I have brought a loaf of challah, and challah is a typically traditional Jewish bread that you eat on Friday night at Shabbat. For me, it is a symbolization of my whole childhood, but it has so much more than just that religious meaning for me, because it really is the first consistent food I saw in my life that meant more than just eating something on a dinner table. So it would always be fresh every Friday, because that's when you'd have it and you'd say the Jewish prayers with your family, and that was really the time for all of us to get together, talk about our weeks, and there's Aaron again, and really get to know one another and see what was happening in each other's lives, more than just like, hey, how was your week? And the challah that we had was the centerpiece to that, and I think it brought everything from the meaning of the end of the week to the jokes me and my sister and brother would have, where like we actually hated the crust, so we would always like dig out the inside of it, to it would be the meals we would have in the coming days, and it wouldn't just be the plain challah, it would be toasted with some cream cheese and tomatoes, you'd have it with peanut butter. There were just endless possibilities of what you can make it as in the coming days. But I think what it really just symbolizes is the end of the week for me. And it's something that will always hold a special place in my heart, and being such a simple loaf of bread.
And would you eat that bread for breakfast, or would it suit any dish?
It really does. Yeah. I think that's what's so special about it too. For anyone that's never seen challah, I think the best comparison for someone that's like never seen it, taste it, heard of it, it's sort of like a brioche, but it's weaved.
Oh, it's braided.
It's braided. So sometimes three, sometimes six different braids. There are countless reasons for why there's three or six braids. But you, on Friday night, you eat it by itself when you say the Jewish prayers for it. And then on Saturday, I would slice it up and, like I said, just like throw some toppings on it, like an open-faced sandwich. But you could also use it because it has that brioche-like texture. You can use it to like dip in a soup, or, and it really would just like soak in all those flavors. So for me, it is one of my favorite types of bread. And yeah, it's just really robust and can be used in any way, shape, or form.
And well, you're saying that Friday you also got a little bit deeper into the connection with each other. And your Instagram tagline says, "Feeding you while asking your deep dark secrets." How did this develop? Where does your love for preparing food and having deep conversations stem from?
It also all stems from that dining table. And I think even though I'm not going to synagogue, I'm not that religious, I really do pull from the morals of the religion and what my parents have taught me. And around that dining table, every single Friday, there were new people. I would never even dare to ask to like go out on a Friday night to a dance or anything like that. Friday night meant like I was in the chair at my home around the table. And with that, my mom will cook for whoever we want to have over. So that the dining table could grow as large as we wanted. And with that came a lot of new conversations with people of all different age ranges. So me and my youngest brother, we are 5 years apart. So let's say I'm talking to people 5-6 years younger than me, but then my parents and all their friends. So you're talking to people 30-40 years older than you. And you're really in this space of having this in-depth conversation consistently every single Friday. So I just found that it was a place I felt really safe. And when I think of what does home mean, what does the feeling of that comfort, homey, safe feeling, like where do I put that? It's around the table. And I know it stems from that. And there was never a topic of conversation that could be spoken about at the table that someone couldn't bring up. So I think I got really comfortable at a young age asking really hard questions to people my senior. So then I was able to ask it to my peers and to my friends because I never felt nervous asking someone older, why did you do something that way? Or how do you feel about this? Or would you think about changing that? And it just became I think I didn't realize until a little after university how not normal asking those types of questions
I was thinking, like, what was the reaction of, like, your environment, like, just naturally asking these questions that push buttons or, like, triggers some stuff?
I would say, like, if I look back in high school, I didn't have, like, a group of friends. I still don't have, I would call it, a group of friends. I have individual relationships with the people around me. Yeah. And the people that I'm still close with today from both high school and university are the people that didn't mind my questions. They didn't mind my hard questions, and they still don't mind them today. And the people that I've gotten close with, it's the same. They know I don't want a surface level friendship. Mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on in your life. And if you're in my, I say my close circle, but it's not really a close circle because we're not all friends. If you're one of my like close relationships that I have, mm-hmm. I'm going to know what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
And I'm going to know on a level that's going to feel really personal.
Yeah, it's more like maybe we don't have to think in way of a circle, but more of some like starry shaped network.
Yeah, it's like these lines. Yes. You're the nucleus of it, and everyone's the nucleus of their own, and mm-hmm. there's kind of just these lines that are going out to each person.
And you were telling about that big dinner table at your home, and on a dinner table there's also dishes and flavor. What does flavor mean to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Flavor means excitement. Flavor means new possibility. Flavor means connection. And I was having a conversation recently with someone about how we actually experience flavor and how we specifically around when, if you're going into someone's home or if you're going to a restaurant, and it definitely feels that sometimes the older generations, and this isn't everyone, so I'm just saying from my experience, some of the older generations, they want their flavor catered to when they go to a restaurant or when they go to someone's home. Whereas my outlook on flavor is, tell me what you're best at. I want to experience that, because what I'm used to doesn't make it the best and shouldn't be the thing that I'm most comfortable with. So flavor for me is really getting to see into who a person is, both whether it be a cook or as a host, and really be able to experience that, whether it be in their home or in their restaurant.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about like if you're hosting a birthday party, for instance, and I was thinking I always bake my own cakes and like do a lot of them and like take such work. I love to do it though, and by like feeding your guests the cakes that you made, it's kind of a devotion to them, and they will taste like the love that's in there. And I was thinking like, shall I just this year buy some cakes from like really great home baked shop? And I was like, I like the sound of the idea, but still like my identity is not in the cake, and it feels a bit off in some way, and I don't know why, but yeah, this is a little bit it
definitely is. Yeah, it touches this feeling of love that you're giving to your guest as someone that thoroughly enjoys cooking and enjoys hosting. Mm. That love is something that I like to show, and it sounds like you do as well, in your food. Mm. So being able to spend that time to show that to your guest is our way of showing them love. It's my love language.
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw this quote, like some people just need a forehead kiss and a grilled cheese sandwich cut diagonally. I was like, that's my love language.
That is mine too. When my partner makes me a coffee in the morning, every morning, and just I come up, or if I've walked the dog that morning and I come home and there's that fresh coffee there and we get to sit and talk for like 20 minutes before work starts.
Yeah.
It's those little touch points of food and drink that,
it's very
that
awesome.
Make me very happy throughout my day and my life.
Yeah, and like all great ideas start with a desire.
Mm-hmm.
When and how did End the Table start?
So, what a lot of people don't know is that And the Table actually started all the way back in 2017. Mm. So, when I moved here from Philadelphia, well, not from Philadelphia, I'm originally from Philadelphia, from Philly to New York, from New York to Amsterdam. And when I moved here, I was in my mid-20s, so this was about 6.5 years ago. And how was I supposed to make new friends? I was in the advertising world at this point in my life, and advertising people only talk to advertising people. And you only talk about advertising. And there was a point that I just got really fed up with that, and that happened quite quickly. So I was really trying to figure out, how can I meet the movers and shakers and just the women making waves in Amsterdam, and how can I get myself out of this pattern of I'm only meeting people in my work. And I had a group of girls I met when I first came here, and how do I only meet, I'm only meeting their friends. So how can I break that? So it's like, okay, I'm gonna host a dinner, 5 women plus me is 6, and I'm gonna make the hook that nobody knows each other. That way the girl that I meet when I'm doing Pilates, or if I'm at a cool new pop-up or a cafe, that I can say, hey, do you want to come to this dinner? I'll always put a theme and a question around it, so it really drives the purpose of why are we 6 strangers sitting around a table. And I'll cook the food. So that was really where the desire started of all of it. And I never thought it would become what it is today. I had hoped. I had really hoped. I think it was something that when I started it back then, I originally thought the path to success was bigger. That's a typical American mindset. Like, bigger means better. So I did long tables and bigger events, and I absolutely hated doing them. There was nothing nourishing about it. I did not feel like I was connecting with anyone, and I felt like I left just exhausted. So coincidentally, COVID hit and it all stopped, and I really got the time to reflect on what did I want. And when we came out of COVID, I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick up these dinners again, but it's just going to be fun. It's going to be my thing on the side. I'm not going to make it a company. It's going to be just relaxing. And well, as I think a lot of people, anyone that knows Anne the Table knows, it's gone completely the opposite direction of just being a side passion thing. I left my job for it. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's great, actually. I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's very great.
Yeah, and I read on the website that Anne the Table is breaking the mold of what women think they need to do in order to make new connections any day of the week. What kind of mold did you experience, and in what way did you feel that it did not fit for you?
Mm-hmm. That's also a really good one, because that hits the core of why I built this. And I sort of touched on it before, but I felt like I was only meeting people in my direct circles, and I didn't have ways to meet women outside of that. I don't like networking events. I don't like going to events that brand themselves as friendship. I found that's all I was getting at this point within Amsterdam, and I just wanted to break that mold of, like, you only had to go to networking events. You only had to be friends with the friends that you met, and you didn't really actually feel like you wanted to stay friends with them, but is that better than having no friends at all? And I really just wanted an easy, casual way to sit around a table and talk with women I never met before. So I found that by creating these dinners, I was like, okay, all girls like to go to dinner parties. Maybe not all, but a good majority of us like to sit around a table, and whether it's dinner, if it's cocktails, if it's lunch, if it's brunch, if it's coffee, but we like to sit around some form of a table and talk. And why not give that a purpose of a theme to help bring the women together that are going through the same thing in life and say, none of us know each other. Let's have a conversation about it.
I liked the idea that with End the Table, it's less about proving something.
Yes.
Because if you go to a networking event, I always felt quite vulnerable and also like not always that same and a little bit of feeling left out, because the focus is a lot on what do you do for a living and are you an entrepreneur? And I always felt like I'm not a real entrepreneur, so like I'm like the imposter here. And as I was like speaking to more people on these events, I told my little story a couple of times, and I felt like at every person I spoke to, I felt shittier and shittier, because I was like, I'm not playing this game very well. Like, I don't like the facade of...
It is. It's all transactional.
Yes, and like, I was like, I don't fucking care what you do for a living.
Well, you realize, because if you don't know the person and you don't care about them genuinely, then it is just a transactional relationship based off of, can what I do help what you do, and what can you do help what I do? And sometimes that is the start of a beautiful friendship.
Yes.
And other times it's just that business transaction, which is also okay to have that in your life.
If you're looking for that.
And that's networking.
Yes.
This is connection. And I think we're at this interesting turning point of friendship, because people think friends need to be something that you've held on to your entire life and you need to continue to hold on to your entire life. Whereas in reality, some of my closest friends I could see 6 times a year, solely because of distance. They live across the ocean, but we catch up on the phone once a week. We send funny memes to each other. I have one girlfriend. We work out every single Tuesday together. That's our thing. Like, I couldn't tell you the last time her and I went out and like partied together. I have a different 2 or 3 girlfriends I do that with, and not one is better than the other. They all bring abundance to my life, and I think we sometimes try to put all the onus of friendship on one person, and they need to be there for you. They need to be your coffee dates. They need to be your workout friend. They need to be your going out friend, but they don't. And I've found that And the Table is able to bring that abundance and the realization that I can have cast a wider net in with these women in my life.
Yeah. And although all dinners happen with different hosts in different cities and have new guests, there are 3 things that are consistent at every End the Table evening: the women, theme and question, and an intimate setting. And I like to learn a bit more about each of the 3 topics, starting with women. Okay, so all women come open solo, ready to meet at most 6 other ambitious women at the table whom they have never met before. Sometimes 4 or 5 ladies, but this evening will never be more than 6 magnificent women. So the whole concept of End the Table is meeting up with max 6 women you never met before to enjoy food and in-depth conversation. But what if you really click with the host or the other guests? Like, can you not join another table from the same host? Or are there ever follow-up dinners with the same group of friendships that were formed?
This is actually a great question, because it's a misconception that a lot of people have. You're allowed to go to as many dinners as much as you want. Of course, you have to request a seat at it. We don't work off of a typical ticket curation system, but you're able to go back to the same host, same theme, different theme. You could go to a dinner Wednesday and a different dinner Thursday. That's truly what we're creating this for, so that it's any day, anytime, anywhere,
yeah.
That you can experience these dinners. And they will never be the same. I think that's also what's the beauty of them. The fact that these dinners will always be different, other than you knowing it will never be more than six. There will always be a theme, there will always be a question, and it will always be around a table.
Mm.
Past that, the ingredients per se,
yeah.
of the table being what's the menu, what is the theme, and who the women are around the table are always different, so the night's always going to be different. So
yeah.
the experience you have one night will be completely different than an experience you have another night, and I think there is something really beautiful in that.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe an important detail to explain is that if you are a host, it's not the case that five random unexpected guests will appear at your home. The guests can apply and will be curated.
Correct.
Can you explain a bit about how this works?
Yeah, definitely. So we, at least for this first phase of it all, I'm not going to rag on anyone else, but there's other platforms that anyone can come on and become a host. It's not necessarily a dinner series, but just anyone can come on and host any type of event. And when I looked into that, there is this level of curation, and you kind of don't know what you're gonna get.
Mm.
And of course, there's still a level of that with Hand the Table, but we try to mediate it slightly.
Yes.
with as a host, you do have to come on and apply to be a host. All hosts send in videos and answer questions, and then we look over them, and then we get on an interview call with the ones that we feel like could potentially be a fit. And after that interview, then you are given the big welcome package of like, this is Hand the Table, welcome. You get to come on the platform as a host, put up your tables, all of that. So I think the reason why I've been so cautious of who comes on at this phase is because hosting's an art form, and we're not just a dinner series where you just have to be a good cook. We're not just women having a conversation, so you need to be a good conversationalist. We don't just focus on where the dinners happen and they can just happen anywhere. No, we want them to look a certain way as well. There's not one cookie cutter box I want them to look like, but when you walk into a host's home, I want you to feel who she is. So all those things need to come together perfectly and harmoniously for someone to come on as a host, especially if you're in a new city that we've never hosted in before, because you're setting the stage for what the next 3, 5, 10 hosts will be in that city.
Oh, wow.
So, and I've learned
that. Don't feel daunted.
No, but I've learned that the hard way in a few cities, that I launched too quickly with a host that wasn't potentially the best host I could find in that city. And then I felt like the quality of those dinners were not up to par with what we see in the Netherlands. So it's a learning experience.
Yeah, of course.
But so yeah, all hosts have to come on and do that. And it's thus far, it's a hard process. I have a really hard time saying no to people. So it has been a huge learning curve for me to just say, to stick to my gut and say, I think you're a great human being, but it's not a match right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's also nice to know as a guest, that you will go to a safe environment with the right atmosphere that you would expect from End the Table.
Correct.
And at every table, there's always also a theme and a question that surround the evening. This helps the conversation continue to flow through the night and allow for a communality, even just meeting for the first time. And this also changes every evening. Well, I saw some really cool themes on the website, like Wild Woman, Moments of Magic, and Our Villain Era. I really like that one.
It's a great one. Those are some of my favorite ones that are currently live.
Yeah. And besides from the theme, every table has one or more dinner questions.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Do you need to answer them when you apply, or how is this navigated during the meetup?
Yeah, so the way the, I should, let's start off in the beginning that all the hosts choose their own themes. Mm-hmm. They run by me before they go live. I make sure if there's two really similar themes that they're not on the same night in the same city, but sometimes you'll see overlapping ones in different cities, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But they choose their theme. A majority of the time, they come up with their titles and their description. I help a lot of them out as well. And from there, when we set it live, you as the guest get to read through all of it. You get to see their menu. And from there, you get to request a seat at the table. And when you're requesting a seat, you fill out a introduce yourself to the host. What's the reason you want to go to this table? And is there anything else the host wants to know about you? And then you round it all off with your dietary restrictions. Mm-hmm. So those are the questions you answer up front to the host. Because remember, you're a stranger going into a host's home. And that's what I try to remind women a lot. This is not just a restaurant where you're like willy-nilly walking in, and like it's like you're going into a very sacred space for someone. So writing one sentence there and just saying this looks fun, I feel like the theme fits, which we get a lot. Yes. Sorry, I saw her face. I'm like, yes. Wow.
Couldn't see that when I was like, what the fuck?
We get a lot of one or two sentence answers to a lot of tables that you have to remember just saying to a host, I think we're like-minded. That doesn't tell the host anything about you. You need to explain who you are, tell the host why you fit the theme, and anything else they should know about you. And then you basically press send. And on your, it's called My Chairs dashboard, you can always see like, have they extended the invite to me? Have they not? And then you can pay all through there. So that's the processes of it as well. And we're definitely, we're learning because mm-hmm. curation system is new. It's mm-hmm. not just a ticketed system. And we understand there can be a lot of heartache from it, of feeling like it's, you're denied when it's definitely not the case, because I try to remind guests that your host isn't just matching you and her. She's matching and she's curating the collective of the women around the other table. Yeah. And she needs to make sure that you collectively as a group of six at most work well together.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have hosts that feel like, oh, this connection is great, she just doesn't match, she doesn't work with the rest of the group. But just know there are new features coming on the platform that are going to work with this, and they're going to help it continue to grow. We're coming up with a new invite system for the host so that they can actually invite guests as well through the guest directory. So it's a learning process for us as well. We really want to keep that magic of the curation, because we feel like that makes us unique to who we are. And it really does add for the magic of the night. But we're learning how to both grow and explore this and make it even more inviting.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll see that in the future.
Yeah. So we'll keep this updated. Hopefully in the next 4 to 5 months. Okay. Hopefully. I'm saying it here so it like
next year.
It holds me to that. I'm getting it done.
And let me see. Lastly, as women open our doors to you as a guest, it's an intimate setting that allows for deep conversation and connection over the meal. This happens either in our homes or at a restaurant. So you can subscribe both as a host or as a guest, and for the host and the table sets quite a high standard for the aesthetics of the dining environment and a table setting. Why is this so important to you?
Yeah, so I think when I really started to look at a lot of different platforms, initiatives, brands out there, I'm personally drawn to ones that are aesthetically more pleasing. I found that even when we were testing, I had everyone put up their own photos when you go onto the like find a table page, and it looked like a dumpster fire. So
like Facebook.
Yeah. And there wasn't that cohesive feeling to the night. We found a way now to start expanding that to other women's table photography, which you're starting to see on the website, which looks great. It took us some time to get there, but I think personally, I'm just a visual person and I like things to look visually aesthetic, but I think the difference is, and I also sort of touched on this before, is that any host could have any different type of aesthetic. Like some of the hosts are clean and minimalistic and precise and everything has its perfect place in their home. And I have other hosts that are crafty and there's paint all over the wall and nothing has a place.
Yeah.
But there's something so beautiful to, I can tell you who both of those women are.
Mm.
And so for us, I really do like to see that the hosts that are coming on right now, especially, you see their personality through their home. And that's more important to me than like a certain aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of you can see that is what's important, that each host has their own identity within when you step into that. And it's not just generic IKEA furniture, and which, don't get me wrong, I have some and it's great, but you can dress it up. There's art on the wall. You can see I have two or three really big art pieces, but like I did all of those. It costs you little to nothing to actually do it compared to go out and buying something. I could never afford something that big, and I'm pointing at my like 2 meters by about 2.5.
Yeah, it's quite gigantic.
Yeah. But I could never afford something that large, but I can paint it because that cost me $150 to do. Yeah. But you really, I like to see that thought throughout a space, because for me, the effort you put into your space is the effort you're also going to give your guests. So that is why we hold it to a higher regard. But like you said, I would say about 90% of the dinners happen right now within the home, and then we have about 5% happening at restaurants, which is great. I think they can work really well at a restaurant. Most important, it's just in a quiet space.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some at restaurants in more open areas, and it you don't feel like you have that intimacy of the home.
Yeah, and the waiter coming in and out.
Exactly. The waiter comes in and out. They kind of set everything off when they do, and they want to like ask you about something.
Yeah, so you're in the middle of like
a really in-depth conversation. Someone's crying, and like the waiter's like yes, do you want like more Coca-Cola? And you're like, wrong time, dude. Wrong time. So that happens. The restaurants do tend to be more expensive. And then as well, the last 5% is actually what's starting, and I absolutely love it. It's in a park, in a forest, in a little picnic.
Yeah, I love that.
Matcha mornings. Ooh, like one of the hosts.
Brunches and stuff.
Yeah, one of the hosts, she is doing Monday mornings and the table, and every Monday morning, she has everyone come over for like coffee and pastries. It's like a great way to start a Monday morning. So yes, that's within the home, but like these are not just dinners and lunches that are now happening. They're starting to happen anywhere that a table or quote-unquote table being like a picnic space or something like that can occur, because you can connect anywhere. So really enjoying that.
And like, if you want to become a host, then you have to host at least 4 to 6 times a year.
Yes.
Why is that?
So the reason I'm doing that currently, it's just about the, like like we said, I'm kind of the mother to these women. And the host that I bring on right now, I want to be committed to building this, because I'm committed to them as well. And 4 times a year being once a quarter, and especially in new cities, this bumps up to 6 to 8, because I don't want to launch in a new city and then someone does it once a year.
Yeah.
And then the women are like, wait, what? Where are the tables?
Yes.
So
people are expecting something.
They're expecting more tables. Okay. So we've had that in 1 or 2 cities now. So that was a learning experience. So now I know anyone in new cities, there really is that 6 to 8 instead of that 4 to 6.
Yeah, because it's kind of a commitment. I was thinking like, oh, it would be so cool to become a host. And then Eindhoven doesn't have somebody hosting yet. But yeah, I have partner too. And he's like home kind of always. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this like 4 to 6 times a year. Like, okay, you have to go out of the home now.
Yeah, I banish him to the bedroom. So
oh, really?
Yeah. Well, so like, for all the listeners, like we live on 2 floors. So like downstairs we have our bedroom and the bathroom. So it's really easy for me to be like, go get some drinks with your friends. When you come home, I'll give you a nice plate of food, but then like you're gone.
Yeah. Oh,
there
yeah,
was like one time he came in, he was like, hey, how are you women doing? I was like, no. Go downstairs. Away. You are not talking to, this is a male-free space.
You were mentioning it all started in your home in Amsterdam. Was that another place than where we're now?
Yes.
Okay.
So it started in my first apartment on Spoustraat.
I
totally butchered that name because I can't do the ow in Dutch.
Oh, Spoustraat. Yeah.
There you go. So it was my first apartment there, and it was such a great apartment to do it in. And our apartment during COVID, we didn't have a great space for hosting. Mm. So it actually just coincidentally worked that I couldn't host there.
Oh.
And now we're in this place, and this is definitely conducive for hosting.
Yes, and you're also like, and the table is hosted in Curaçao, Lissabon, Madrid, Bordeaux, Brooklyn, Brussels, Serbia, Austin, Texas, and many more countries and cities around the world. How many tables have you hosted since?
So me or
both?
All total?
Both.
Okay, so since the platform has launched in March of 2023, I personally have hosted 11 tables, and that number was higher in the beginning. Like I would do 1-2 tables a month. Now I've gotten to the place I'm kind of doing it monthly or bi-monthly, just because of how busy it's been building the platform. But then all the other women since the platform launched, there have been a little over, I think it's 280 tables.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot.
That's quite a lot, which is phenomenal. I want to get to the place where I'm doing that per month. So there's quite some ambition here to continue to build. And again, this is just since the platform launched. We were building everything for the year prior to that. And I commend the hosts that have stuck with me prior to, there were 22 of them prior to the platform launch, because it was a lot of Excel sheets and emails and frustration and color coordination. But they, I really commend them for sticking with it. And overall, believing in me. But we now are at the place where all this stuff happens really seamlessly, and it is just continuing to build. We had our largest amount of tables last month at about 35 tables last month. Yeah. So,
and if you're a host and you can set a price for tickets, like a seat at a table, but like, is there a commission or like that goes to you? Yeah. Like, how many percentage do the hosts give to Enter Table?
Makes sense. So yeah, all the hosts get to choose their own price, and the reason why we do that is because every table is different.
Yeah.
Some hosts have culinary experiences and some do not, and they're more home cooks. Others do, like we said, Monday morning, which is a lot cheaper than doing a five-course tasting meal at dinner.
Yeah.
So the price differs, and it also differs where you are. Groceries in some parts of Europe are a lot more expensive than other parts compared to the U.S. So we find it really important that every host gets to set their price for what their dinner is. And then we add a flat fee on top of that.
Yes.
So we just add a base flat fee, so the host knows what is going to be added to whatever her price is.
Yeah.
And from that, plus fun European taxes, comes the total price. It's something I actually want to work on the platform of breaking that down a bit better, because I think it's a bit inconspicuous and you think the display price is everything that the host is getting, and it's not.
Yeah. It's nice to know for you as a guest, and then you understand more.
They're not charging 65 euros. They're actually charging 50 euros. Then there's plus the fee plus tax, which is 21% in the Netherlands.
It's a lot.
So it's a lot. And so with that, then they understand the breakdown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
What was or were the most memorable and table evenings?
Oof. This is a hard one. And I say that for a few reasons. I say it for the first reason of there are so many memorable evenings, and they're all for different ways. And I know that's a really generic answer, but they truly are. But I think if I'm the thing, I've been asked this question quite some recently, and I've actually not given the true answer, because I think it's a bit difficult, in the sense that, like, I've met one of my closest friends through And the Table over the past two and a half years. She walked into my door and I was just like, you will be my friend. So
I choose you.
I was like, I hope you choose me too. She just blew me away from the story of her life and how open and honest she was, and it just genuinely blossomed into an incredible friendship, and that will always stay with me. And unfortunately, she passed away 2 months ago.
Oh, so it's okay.
It's definitely not okay.
Yeah.
And it was very sudden, and it's still really coming to terms with everything that has happened. And I think she is someone that will always stay in my heart for everything she not only brought to my life, but brought to every single person's life that she touched. She's the first friend also I've had such a distance in age with. She was 8 years my junior, and so mature. And I think that even though she was only a part of my life for such a short time, she brought so much just happiness and spontaneity. And I am so thankful that this brought her into my life, and I know a lot of other women as well, because she hosted as well.
Oh.
So the connections that she made through it and the way that she was able to touch people. So that is definitely my most memorable to date. And the first thing I think of when anyone asks me that question, because she holds such a big part of my heart.
Yeah.
So,
thank you so much for sharing so honestly.
I'm just surprised I got through without crying. But
you don't have to, but yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a beautiful story, and also so beautiful that you were able to meet her through End the Table.
Yeah,
so
it really is.
Yeah,
so
it really sticks.
It does. It sticks with you, and it will always stick with me.
I said at the beginning of the interview that you are the founding mother of End the Table, but I'm guessing you're not the only heart and soul of End the Table anymore. Is there a little team behind you, and were they with you from the start? Did they join in later as End the Table grew into a bigger platform?
So, there are definitely a lot of people that have helped me along the way. I would say, if you go back to all the way back to when I started it in 2017, I did it with a girlfriend, and she just really pushed me to continue to do it and everything I love about doing it. When I relaunched it in 2022, it was no longer with her, but she has been such a big support in telling me to keep going and building and growing it. So you have people like that. I have my dev team, which I would not be able to have this platform if it would not be possible without them. And them really working with me and taking all the crazy ideas I have and bringing them to life. And then I would say, most importantly, I have Alex. Alex is like my right hand. Technically you call it an intern, but she does everything and anything that I need help with. I wrapped it up with Alex. She finished and she's needs a full-time job, and I wish I could be at the financial place to bring her on full-time. I'm just not there yet. I think that's important to say, because a lot of people think by sometimes the amount of followers you have
or the aesthetics
or you're growing in such a certain pace that you're already so big. I always laugh when we get emails of like, "And the Table team," I'm like, ha ha.
That's me. And you.
Today I'm wearing this hat, next day I'm wearing the other hat. I've also had, I'm sorry if you hear Zarin slurping her water in the background. I've had women come on here and there to whether it be helping me out with managing new hosts coming on, or like going through the videos, replying to emails. But those are really just on a quick contract. I say just, but like, I'm so thankful for their help of coming on and doing it. But those, no one there is full time. They refer a set period of time that like I'm focusing on the platform, so I need help for 2-3 weeks, they come on, they help, and then they jump off. I think it's important to say, because people think it's just like you bring on employees and you continue to grow. It's like, no, it's really this puzzle that you're constantly, I forget what the game was when we were children, when the timer would go out and everything would like fly up into the air the puzzles. It basically feels like that every single day, and you're working on a timer and you don't know what's going to happen, and then it rambles and you're kind of putting all the pieces back, and then it rambles again, and you're just kind of you're rolling with it. That's a part of growing with it. And there are some days that I'm like, this is amazing, I love what I'm building, I'm so thankful, this is the thing that I get to do every day. And there are other days I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Fuck.
Like, I was at a dinner party and someone literally is curing cancer. And he was like, our friend's parents were there, and he's coming up. They came up with like the antidote that is now going to be put through testing for like pills that get to be taken by someone that's going through chemo, so like you don't have all the horrible side effects of it. So he's sitting here going through this, and they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I throw dinner parties. I was like, I don't know how I followed that up. So there are some days that you're just like, what at a base am I doing? But then there, of course, the other side of that where you're helping loneliness, you're creating connection, you're building the bridges to for women to really foster and build those friendships in their lives, because friendship gets fucking harder as we get older.
It's like, it's not a cure for an illness, but it sure is filling up a void that is in a lot of people, and not as a quick fix, but just like
it's filling up your cup.
That's what it is. So last question,
go for it.
Do you have dreams or a vision for the future? Tell me.
Definitely. I think a lot of people think this is just like a small little dinner series, and that for me is just the start of this. Our mission is really simple. It's connection at any age. That is it. Doesn't matter what age you are, it is about connection. And our vision is to become the experience platform to do that. Mm-hmm. Friendship apps suck. They're bad. I don't want to swipe for my friends. I don't want to look at their picture and make a judgment call based off of that, if I should be friends with them or not. I want to get to know someone in a setting where my walls are down and we can genuinely have a conversation, because the sad part about the online reality of all that swiping is we do make preconceived judgments and notions about people. I really want to create this and foster it, the place that no matter where you are, you could find a table and an experience. It's never more than six, and you really get to build those connections in and out of your city any day of the week. And it's, you singularly get to choose by yourself to do that, because the five other women are doing exactly the same thing.
It's so cool. I'm so enthusiastic about
good.
It.
I'm glad.
I would like to experience it for myself. Definitely. Time too. Thank you so much for sharing so openly with us your flavorful story. And I'm very excited to experience it for myself sometime. And if this podcast triggered your curiosity too, and you are excited to host or join a table, go to andthetable.com, written as and-the-table.com, and follow at andthetable, it's and.the.table on Instagram. And thank you for listening to this episode. It was one beautiful mess. We had this lovely dog at our side, so maybe you might have heard her through this episode. I hope you still enjoyed it, and see you next time with maybe another pet.
Bye, everyone.
Hungry for more? Subscribe to Once Upon a Taste the podcast to never miss an appetizing episode. Follow me on Instagram at onceuponataste.podcast or check onceuponataste.com. Do you have a cool story to tell? A written short story to read aloud? Or perhaps an interesting question or topic? Just let me know via info@onceuponataste.com. Until the next episode of Once Upon a Taste, a podcast that brings taste to the table.